Okay, so yesterday we laid out some of the major questions about the walls of a sukkah, about the fact that the Mishnah tells us a couple of details, and it's noteworthy what it tells us and what it doesn't tell us, regardless of whether it's a din, but the dinim that are not spelled out here and the dinim that are spelled out that maybe could have elsewhere not been spelled out, something we'll probably take note of. But among the dinim that this Mishnah tells us is that the sukkah has to have walls. And apparently it has to have three walls. But as we discussed yesterday, it's interesting, there's a girsa notation in the Mishnah, because the word shlosha is surrounded by parentheses. So if you look in the Masoros HaShas, it seems to be a question of dikduk, whether it should say shlosha defanos or whether it should say shalosh defanos. But it's not that that word can be removed completely, because then that would be a whole different meaning. Say a sukkah doesn't have defanos. Okay, that's a question. But, okay, the Mishnah says sukkah that doesn't have three defanos, however, whichever Hebrew word you use for it, has to have three defanos. And as we saw yesterday, not so clear that this third wall really just has to be wall-ish, and can be a tefach, with some discussion how it interacts with the concept of Tzuras HaPesach. So we laid out a few questions, whether this tefach concept is an actual wall, and if so, how? Doesn't seem to qualify as a wall in any other system of perception. And is it something that is part of the Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai? I happened to notice today in the Rishim Mishurim of Rav Soloveitchik that Rabbi Reichman wrote that it's here he takes it as a given that this is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, that the idea of Tefach is a part of the Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai expansion of the details of the Sukkah. But we tried to figure out, so does it mean that that's a wall, or does it mean that just like other Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai rules in Sukkah, it's viewed as if it's more? So is the wall the tefach? Is the wall more than a tefach? That was one of the questions we wanted to consider. And we saw that some of the Rishonim seemed to say the tefach is the wall, while other Rishonim had a language that made it sound like the tefach, for purposes of halacha, continues even though it's only of limited space. So those were some of the questions that we tried to clarify yesterday. And we recognize that a part of our job is going to be figuring out how this interacts with Shabbos. That clearly there is a lot to connect these sugyas and the sugyas of Erev and Shabbos. And yet there are differences. So we knew that we were going to have to take a deeper dive into that in order to try to understand what's going on here. That contrasting this whole concept with the concept of Erev and Mechitza for Shabbos purposes is going to be helpful and necessary for us. So today, that's really where we're at. So let's spend a few minutes doing that, trying to understand what exactly connects the two and what exactly divides the two, and for the 10th time, no pun intended, to just keep coming. So what exactly would you say divides the two and what joins the two? It's easy to see what connects the two, right? In both cases, we talk about walls, and we talk about areas, and we have measurements. Maybe we have even greater overlapping terminology, question of what role Tzuras HaPesach plays. So it's not hard to find connections between Shabbos and Sukkot, especially if you have to give a drasha on Chol Moed. But what possibly could divide them? So that's probably most productive to try to think about it conceptually first. And yesterday we mentioned some of the differences. Maybe today you saw some more of the Gemaras, or you mentioned some of the kulas on both sides. Shabbos has a kula that the walls wouldn't necessarily have to physically go up. We talked about the potential Manhattan Erev. And in a sukkah, it's not true. In a sukkah, we have a standard that we have to have mechitzos nikaros, that have to be evident walls. And when it comes to Shabbos, we have rules such as you have to have omen ruba laparitz, and when it comes to sukkah, We don't have that standard necessarily, and we have this idea of tefach, which doesn't work for Shabbos. So some kula, some chumrah. So before exploring more details, you have already a sense. So let's try to figure out conceptually, because it will help us. Are the concepts really the same? What might help to try to categorize the concepts maybe in a different way from each other?
Having.
Yes, so what is the purpose of each one? What would you say?
So I would say that the year is to define the Shio Sending, the Rosh Hashanah, rather than to have every month be that.
Okay.
Allow you to care, however. Whereas Ahsoka, as you said, here specifically, you have to create a structure to undo a problem.
Okay. Okay, I mean, that. I think that is a very good way to start and a very good chunk of it. Glad you wanted to say something. Possibly. That's an interesting question to figure out. It may be the case, but then we have to see also the mechanism by which that happens, but that might be true. But you're saying, therefore, that's a problem with distinguishing between them? So, not necessarily. And we're going to see, and again, we've already seen clues that we're somewhere in the twilight zone here, because we know there are differences, but we know that they're linked for certain purposes. So anyway, we look at it, we're going to find some kind of uneasy balance. So to start, we're obviously started with trying to at least figure out what their primary purpose is a worthwhile place to start. So I think he's correct, and Reb Chaim said something similar. You can find this quoted in many Sfarim, but certainly in the Rishima Shirim of Soloveitchik, again written by Rabbi Reichman, you see there that such a distinction is drawn. That when it comes to Shabbos, so the idea is that we need to essentially isolate and rope off an area as a Rosh Hashanah. So we need tools that separate one area from another. That's one of the things that walls do. Also have to be careful not to have any of this turn into some kind of political drush, right? So one of the things that walls do is it creates a separation. Another thing that it does is a wall is a part of a house. So we know that you can't have a house without walls, no matter how friendly you are. So you can't have a dira without walls either. And if a sukkah is meant to be a dira, so then we need walls for that purpose. So that's essentially what I think I said a minute ago, and presumably there's a lot of truth to that. So one of the ramifications that Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Chaim already pointed out is for a halacha that's known as Ketute Michtash Yurei. Familiar with that halacha? Right, and that's a sukkah concept, so it's a concept that will come up later in Masechta Sukkah. So we'll talk about it for a minute now. That there is a din called Ketute Michtash Yirei, which means that if you have something, let's say the Gemara is going to later on talk about a lulav shel Asherah, that you have a lulav that was used as an avodah zarah. So the halacha is avodah zarah has to be destroyed. So this lulav is on death row. This lulav has to be destroyed. So you cannot use that for lulav on sukkahs. Not only after it's destroyed, which wouldn't be much of a chiddush, but even while it's waiting to be destroyed, that has this concept of we see it as if it's already crumbled up. And what we find is that this concept is invoked very often when there's a halacha that requires a shear. A lulav has to be a certain length. And essentially, Ketute Michtash Shirei means that we don't care how long it is, it can be the longest lulav in the world, and search YouTube for some pretty impressive displays. If that lulav, no matter how long it is, happens to be in a halachic death row, so it's ki'ilu, it's not big enough. It doesn't matter how big it actually is. It is considered as if it doesn't meet the shir. Ketute Michtash Shirei. Now, Reb Chaim, in a different section, Reb Chaim in his Sefer on the Rambam, in Hilchos Shabbos, points out that sometimes we apply Ketute Mechta Shire and sometimes we don't. So there are two different types of shirim that exist. Sometimes a shir in halacha, a shir is there because something needs to have chashivas, something needs to be recognized as a significant item. And if it's too small, then we can't call it chashiv, we can't recognize it. So it's just there as a status. If something isn't a certain size, then even though it could be functional on some level, but still, we don't give it importance. While in other times, we find a shir invoked. The shir is not, in that sense, just to give status. It's a functional point, that there's a certain reality that needs to be addressed, and that reality requires a certain size. And that's also going to require us to measure things. So Reb Chaim explained, and you find this really in many other places, maybe in Rishonim too, that the concept of ketute michta shiure, this considering an item as if it's not big enough, regardless of its actual size, that only applies when a shir is there for chashivas purposes. If a shir is supposed to grant an item status, so then we say, well, it's very nice that it's humongous, but if it's waiting to be destroyed, then it's not chashiv no matter what. So that undoes the status that's given by its shear, and we view it as if it's insignificant regardless of how big it actually is. But if a shear is there for practical purposes, so then if it covers the territory, it covers the territory. And even if the halacha doesn't see it as significant because it's waiting to be destroyed, that's not going to affect things here. A shear that's there for a practical, functional reason, if it's big enough, it's big enough, and we won't worry about this ketute michta shiure issue. You follow that difference? That makes sense? Right? So basically, if we care about how big something is, sometimes it's because we just need that much material, in which case, if it's really physically there, then it's there. That's all that matters. And sometimes it's because we want something to be significant, and in that case, we would apply Ketute Michta Shiure, we would apply this halacha that we care about its importance and its future. So said Reb Chaim, that explains the difference when it comes to a wall for a sukkah and a wall for mechitza on Shabbos. Now for mechitza on Shabbos, we would be able to use a wall that's made of Atzei Asherah, a wall that's made out of wood that was worshipped, and that has to be destroyed, nonetheless, that could still be effective as a mechitza for Shabbos. But for a wall for a sukkah, not so much. You follow what the difference is? Right? That when it comes to Shabbos, all we care about is dividing off this area. So we need to cover a certain amount of territory. So if it does it, it does it. We don't care about its significance halachically. But when it comes to sukkah, yes, we're also marking territory, but it needs to have a din of a wall. And when it comes to sukkahs, to put it differently, when it comes to sukkahs, we care about the wall. When it comes to Shabbos, we don't care about the wall, we care about what the wall does. We care that the wall is there to separate, and the essence of the wall is not of any importance to us. And when it comes to sukkah, it's more than that. When it comes to sukkah, we want the wall to be a wall. Not just what it does, but that the house has walls. Okay, that difference makes sense? Along the lines of that, yes, Patrol?
So, Gregor, is the schach then secondary to the wall?
No, the schach always has its own chashivas, like we've seen throughout. But aside from the fact that the schach is the most important thing, we know that we need walls. So what is it that we need to qualify as walls? That becomes important. And it's just noteworthy, and we're going to have ramifications, that sukkah needs walls, and Shabbos needs the impact of walls, which may not necessarily qualify as a wall. And who's up first? Harrison?
Doesn't the Gemara later talk about that, when it says that a mu'av is neither shear nor shaking?
Yes.
Wouldn't that fall under the Shabbos wall category?
So that's a very interesting question, and God willing, we'll get there. There, the extra tefach is lananeibo. So it seems like first it has a certain chashivas to establish it, but your question is very well taken, and just giving you a very brief answer, God willing, hopefully we'll get there again into more detail. But the extra tefach, it says for that. Hi. A wall needs to be a wall. So we're saying that anything that doesn't meet a certain standard, we can't consider it a wall. Maybe it will keep people out, maybe it won't, maybe it will demarcate a certain area, but it's not all that we need when it comes to sukkahs. It needs to be a wall. So to give another example, just to take it one step further, the Mishnah says that the wall has to also be asarat tefachim, right? She'ena gavoa asarat tefachim. Which you could kind of miss that, because the Mishnah at first really is talking about the sukkah as an entity, and now really this is a din in a wall, right? The wall has to be asara tefachim. So Reb Chaim explains, and it's hard to know sometimes with how much the Rav is adding, how much from Reb Chaim, but Reb Soloveitchik explained that there is a difference when it comes to sukkah. The requirement of 10 tefachim comes from two places. One is that a wall, b'chol Torah kula, is 10 tefachim. So we know that. In addition to that, there's also the fact that if it was less than 10 tefachim, it would not be considered a dira. And how do we know that? That's a Gemara. I didn't put this on your Narmakomos list, I think, because got to figure out where to stop. You know, again, they can put the endless things on. But the Gemara on Dav Dalet. So the Gemara tells us that if you have a situation where you have a sukkah that's only 10 tefach dalet amud aleph, and if you take a look for a second, so if you have a sukkah that's only 10 tefach, right, it's the middle of dalet amud aleph, and I take a look, the line starts with the word mechamasam, but in the middle, haisa gavoa yud tefachim. Let's say I have a sukkah that's exactly 10 tefach. V'hut senyord l'soch yod. And you have stuff that's hanging down from the top, so it's compromising the space. So now it's less than 10 inside if you factor that in. So, Sovra Abayi Lameimar Im Chamasim Mitzelsim Sheira. Amale Rava, so Rava says, Ha Diros Ruchahi. Ve'ein Adam Dar B'Diros Rucha. That's considered to be a sagging residence, and the person wouldn't live in such a thing. So you see from there that midin dira, you also need the space of at least 10 tefachim. So there's two reasons when it comes to sukkah to have a 10 tefach limit, and that's different than Shabbos. Shabbos is just the issue of what's considered to be a divider. And he goes on to note also that the fact that our Mishnah includes this din reflects that. Because the first Mishnah in Erevin, where you have similar structure, first Mishnah in Erevin doesn't mention the 10 tefachim minimum, even though it's true too. And when it comes to a mechitzah of Shabbos, also has to be 10 tefachim. So he said, there we don't need to be told it, because we know we need a dividing wall, and a dividing wall, b'chol Torah kula, is 10 tefachim. But here the Mishnah is mentioning it, because it's telling you that not only as a dividing wall, but also as a wall of substance that the sukkah requires, it has to be 10 tefachim, and that's why our Mishnah makes sure to include it here. I wonder if so, you know, among the ways to draw this distinction, the distinction of whether we're interested in the walls or we're interested just in what the walls do, I think there's also perhaps another way to phrase it, and maybe you'll keep this in mind and see if it plays out perfectly as we go on, see if it bears out. But it seems like we're also saying that when it comes to Shabbos, we're interested in what the space is not. And when it comes to Sukkah, we're interested in what the space is. Meaning that for Shabbos, we need the space not to be a Rosh Hashanah. And so therefore we are interested in this space being marked off as something private, something which is not a Rosh Hashanah. While when it comes to Sukkah, it's not that we care what it's not, we need it to be something. We need it to be a Dira, and that perhaps is going to give some context to some differences also. So keep that distinction in mind and see if you think it bears out as we see some further concepts. You can also find this expressed a little bit. Here's another Mar Malkum again, which you can look at tomorrow. Didn't put it on again for similar reasons. But on Daf Dalet, so there is a Gemara and a Tosfos, which I want to call to your attention. And it's really the last line of a long Tosfos, which again, didn't want to drive you crazy, so just look at it together. But the Gemara here tells a din regarding Sukkah as follows. The bottom of Dalet Amud Aleph, the top of Dalet Amud Beis. So the Gemara talks about, let's say you have a Sukkah that's less than 10 Tefachim. But you fixed it. How do you fix it? Chakak ba kedei lahashlim ala asara. You dig a hole in the middle. You're sitting in the middle of your Sukkah, and you're somehow sitting through kind of a complicated construction job, but somehow in the middle of this less than 10 Tefachim Sukkah, you're able to excavate, and you dig below so that it's going to be high enough. You're going to have enough space from the floor now till the top of the Sukkah. So the Gemara says that helps, but there's another detail you have to pay attention to. Right? So Chakak ba kedei lahashlim ala asara. You made a space of 10 Tefachim. But you have to focus on something else also. Im yesh misvas chakak v'lakoso gimel tefachim sula. That's not going to be good enough if this hole that you made on the floor, if the edge of that is more than 3 tefachim away from the walls, that's a problem. That's too far away because you can't consider them connected to each other. So you have a sukkah that's got half a wall over here and half a wall now down into your basement section, and they're not connected to each other. But if they are close enough, then fine. So pachos mishlosha tefachim, if there's less than 3 tefachim gap, then ksheira, then we consider it all to be one. Okay, everyone understands that then? So Tosfos asks, how come you don't find that same requirement when it comes to Shabbos? The same concept exists in Hilchos Shabbos of excavating below to make a high enough space. And there we don't find any attention paid to how far away the edge of the hole is from the already existing wall. So why not? You hear the question? That you can excavate to make something big enough, you can go down to make something big enough, but in Hilchos Sukkah we find that it has to be connected to the existing wall by being within 3 Tefachim. And in Hilchos Shabbos we don't find that requirement. So what's the difference? Yeah?
I'm sorry, so you're saying that by Irvin, we don't even have the concept of digging and excavating?
You do. No, it's easier. You do have it. Being close to the wall, that's the part you don't have. Right? This condition, that it has to be close enough to the wall so it can be considered all one wall, that's a rule by Sukkah and not by Shabbos. So, you could zero in just on the last line of this Tosfos in Dalet Amud Beis, Pachos Mishlosha Tefachim. So, really the last two lines. So it says, Tosfos, Lo Mar Delo Dami Rishos Shabbos, Shehulim Noah Regal Rabim, L'sukkah Deboina Mechitza Smuchos L'schach. Right, so can you explain that line to me in light of what we've been saying so far? Right, Harrison?
Yeah, when it comes to sukkah, the bigger part of the sukkah is that the walls go like top to bottom, that the walls are the right size versus by air, and where it's just, it's marking all the inner territory.
Yeah, I mean, just to add another word to it, but you're correct, right, that when it comes to Shabbos, all we care about is keeping the public out, saying this is a private territory. So we don't care whether it's one wall, two half walls, three mini walls, whatever it is that has that impact, that's what Shabbos requires. But when it comes to Sukkah, bo'ina mechitzas smuchos l'schach, the mechitzas have to be adjacent to the schach. In other words, we're saying that we want the walls to be something here. We want them to be real walls, like a house with the walls go to the roof. And if you're having half a wall here, half a wall there, and this lower part has got nothing to do with the schach, it's not a house. So this Tosfos is highlighting this difference again, that there is a definition when it comes to sukkah, which is different than the definition when it comes to Shabbos. And we could see this perhaps in a few other points also. So, as we mentioned yesterday, so there's a machlokas rishonim about the bottom line of the Gemara on Daf Zayin, the question of whether Tzuras HaPesach has a role in Sukkah or not. And the Ran is among those rishonim who says that Tzuras HaPesach is not a Sukkah thing. It is a Shabbos thing. So here again, you can explain the same way, as Rishalvesh again points out, that when it comes to Shabbos, the Tzuras HaPesach makes sense because the Tzuras HaPesach designates a certain area. Okay, so we can say that this shows you this area has an identity to it. But when it comes to Sukkos, we don't just need that. We need a wall. And the Tzuras HaPesach is not a wall. It's not a wall that a household would have. Even a Diras Arayah. So that position in Rishonim that says Tzuras HaPesach doesn't have a sukkah relevance is consistent with that. And it's also interesting that even according to the first opinion of the Gemara that says that the Tzuras HaPesach is the tefach, right? You take the tefach and you make a Tzuras HaPesach out of it, half of a tefach on one side and half a tefach on the other side. So in Hilchos Shabbos, we don't have a thickness requirement for the Tzuras HaPesach. You can even use reeds. So again, it suggests the same point, that even to the extent that we find Tzuras HaPesach in Sukkah, it's a different Tzuras HaPesach. A Tzuras HaPesach that has to be wall-like. Well, when it comes to Shabbos, we don't have those same requirements. So again, it's essentially the same point again and again that we're establishing. So, those are a few detailed distinctions between Shabbos and Sukkah. And we've seen a framework, again, no pun intended, to, that explains why some of the rules may play out differently than the others. Now, that's helpful for a couple of things. It's helpful for us to just know why there are differences in Sukkah and in Shabbos, but it's also helpful for us to go back now and try to understand why is a Sukkah the way it is. So the idea of a tefach, that it's effective for a wall and a Sukkah and not for Shabbos, is interesting, and let's try to see if we can understand that a little better. Now, if you recall from yesterday, I also asked you to pay attention to a certain fact. The sentence I just said is only partially true. Right? To say that a tefach is good as a wall for a sukkah needs a little bit more specificity, right? What did I not clarify just now? Sorry? Well, that's a separate question, but just that statement by itself, is it true that a tefach counts as a wall for sukkah? Okay, we'll get to that. Yeah. Oh, it doesn't just count for any wall. It counts for a third wall. That's a very important detail. Crucial detail. And the subject of Machlokas Rishonim and Machlokas Gemara also, do we care how the two walls are configured? Do they have to be perpendicular and touching each other? Or is it different if they're opposite each other and it's a mavoi kind of structure? So it's not so simple to say the tefach counts as a wall. The tefach counts specifically as a third wall. So what's the story with that? So does anyone want to try to take a stab at it? Does that give us any clue to understanding exactly what's happening here? So let's try to think about it for a second. What do we want the walls in a sukkah to do? Adira, right? So protect, not so much. But essentially, we're trying to create a structure. Right? We're trying to create a house. And we know that a house has walls. So what kind of minimum can we say will establish that this is a house with walls? So it could be that really, it's actually the two walls that really do it. And you find Lashonos like this in some Rishonim. Again, I had some Rachmanis on your hunting time, but I'm happy to point out more specifically again if you want to look at it tomorrow or any other time. As a language like this in Yerushalmi also, that a sukkah is really made kosher by two walls plus something. So the two walls establish that you have the bare bones of a house. So what does the extra tefach do? Specifically and necessarily in conjunction with those two walls. Well, not really support, because not strong enough. Yes? Maybe. Well, which pasuk specifically?
No, I'm saying like in the where it said pasuk goes three times. Mm-hmm. If we're going to argue that the first two are the primary structure walls, the third one is just going to flood the pasuk into the next pasuk. So there's a lot of time. Yeah.
But why can't we do that then for all three of them?
I don't know. They just said before that perhaps that really the anchor structure is the first two.
So we need that to be part of the explanation. I'd say it's not just about the pasuk. Right?
It's tough to imagine this midja accomplishing anything besides for just being an indicator that these two walls are supposed to be enclosing something.
Oh, but maybe that's
supposed to be two random walls.
Oh, but maybe that's what we need. Maybe that's the whole point. You said it in a negative way. You can't imagine it being anything other than just that. Maybe that's...
It's a smidge. So it's clearly not...
Are you saying this positively or negatively? Are you asking a question? Or
I'm saying...
Saying something. Okay. So I think that's the point, that you might be onto something. I came across a beautiful sefer. I picked this up in Lakewood called Lev Ladas. And it's written by Rabbi Zevin. I don't know if he's related to the famous Rabbi Zevin. I looked through. I couldn't find any indication that he was... a descendant of Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin has got nothing otherwise to do with the sentence, but I should just mention that it's among the most beautiful halachic writing of the 20th century. He was a master of a lot of things, very, very worthwhile reading Rav Zevin's writings. I don't know if he's an ancestor of this Rav Zevin. Couldn't find any mention, but this one also deserves a lot of praise for Sefer. So the Sefer, which I just came across, but the Sefer Lev Ladas, so he has a lot of very long essays about things, and he has a whole section, very, very detailed chunk of the Sefer about this topic, about Shlishus Afilu Tefach. And in this, the first of his number of essays about this, so he talks about essentially making out these points. Right, what does the third wall that's a tefach do? It creates a mental image. This is really how he phrases it. He says that what the seichel does, what the mind does, is that when you look at this, you see two planks, if they're either way perhaps, if they're perpendicular, if they're parallel. So then that's just two planks. I'm trying to use a word other than walls. Two boards. But once you have that little bit of a mashu in the third direction, so then the mind fills in the whole picture. Then, okay, this is a designated area. This is a cubicle, so to speak. Now, this is something. Without this, it's just two boards. But once you have a little bit more, that creates a third direction. So then the mental picture that you get from looking at that is that, okay, this is now an entity. This is now a structure of some kind. Hi.
Does anyone say anything about the fact that by schach you need rove, so here too, and might be just an aspect of rove, as in like two walls would be 50% of that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question to explore just how much rove fits in here, because it's worth just to address that for a moment. Rove does have a role in a lot of things here. Happens to be in Rav Soloveitchik Shirim, this discussion about this part also, but it's worth just as a general horror to point out when we use rov and when we don't, and maybe this supports what you're saying. So, for example, if we say that a wall, one of the other walls, needs to be 7 tfachim across, right? So we wouldn't say, okay, so 4 is enough, because it's a measurement of 7. And when we have a shear, we don't apply rove to say rove is enough. We mean you need that actual number. But when you're dealing with an item, so that item sometimes can be looked at as one entity, and if it's mostly done, we say rubo kukulo. So for example, kos on Pesach night, you don't have a mitzvah to drink a certain measurement. We measure what a kos is, but the din is to drink a kos. So when you have rov kos, so then that's considered to be, most of the one item is considered to be the whole thing. So in order to apply a rov to the whole cheft of the sukkah, so you're right, you have to look at it as one entity, which perhaps is consistent with what we're saying here. But it's also interesting how it applies to each wall by itself. That it could be there's a concept of rov being invoked just by this wall, according to some formulations of how this tefach has to be aligned. And so it could be that we wouldn't use it for the other walls, because there they have to be seven tefachim. But it could be for the third wall, we do use rov, because it's a different kind of concept, which is something which is interesting to explore. And you're saying more, maybe for the whole sukkah, there's a possibility that it has an impact here. Hi.
If you're going to go along the road that
it says
rov, then we're going to make a difference from having placement of the first two walls.
Unless we need it, that's not the whole story. Right? We need it to present a certain image. And we're not sure to what extent the placement makes a difference. That's also a topic of machlokes, but you're probably right. Hi.
Can you apply the concept of growth? So you know, you have to have a shear from seven.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have, let's say, well, if you have seven,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so some do understand.
Can you extend that to say it's a wall to cover the whole thing with rope?
Yeah, but only for, possibly, that's how some understand it, but only for that third wall.
Okay.
Right, and that's, so the first two walls, we wouldn't say rove on them, because it's a measurement. You know, it has to be seven tefachim, means seven tefachim. But the third wall perhaps has a different function, we just need it to be established as serving its purpose, and there maybe something like rove would indeed make sense. But I think Akiva is saying something a little bit different, but maybe possibly also with some truth to it, that the whole sukkah we could look at as once it's rov there, then we see it as there, essentially. Which may even not require the halacha rov in general. Maybe it's just an extension of the same kind of concept, that we're looking for a dira, and a dira could establish itself mentally in the perception of people who see it with a certain minimum, and once it's most this area is mostly marked off, people see it as marked off. So essentially, that's what, and the Sefer Levadas especially, so he has a whole discussion along these lines, that's what the Tefach does. That it creates the mental picture that this is now somebody's area, this is now somebody's Dira. And once that's the case, so it's effective. So he goes on to suggest also that the Rishonim that we mentioned, we said yesterday, it seems like there's a difference in Rishonim as to how to understand the Tefach. Is the Tefach the wall? And it's the whole wall? And we mentioned the Ravya that nobody could find today that has a Havamina that you can only sit by that part because that's the wall? Or is it like the other Halacha Moshe Mitzinai, is that we see the Tefach as extending beyond itself? So some of the Rishonim had the language that we see it as nimshach, we see it as continuing. So he wants to understand the Lev Ladas, that it's not like the other halachal Moshe Mitzinai, that it extends halachically even beyond its physical dimensions. It means that the mind perceives it as extending, that the mind sees this tefach there, so he sees it, we look at this and we see this as designating this as a house, and therefore it's effective. So that type of perspective helps us to understand two distinctions here. One, why it's not relevant to Shabbos in the same way. And two, why it's only relevant from the third wall on. Right? It wouldn't work by itself. It wouldn't work independently. It only works in conjunction with two other walls. And it works for Sukkah as opposed to Shabbos. Both of those major distinctions we can understand within that kind of perspective. Okay, so far so good? Make sense? Yes, sir.
Is it completely exempted?
We're speaking about the third wall, Tefach, which yesterday we said is, you could argue whether it's Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim or something else. I mentioned today that Rav Soloveitchik seems to take it as a pasha that it is Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Possibly, yeah. I mean, presumably that then, you know, one of the, now whether that detail of how the Tefach is, that might be a Drabbanan. What kind of Tefach it is, it's a subject to Machlokas, that might be another story. But, right. But the idea of the Tefach itself, so that we discussed yesterday as a question, whether it's Halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Saw the Rashash who did include it, mentioned today the Rav Soloveitchik did include it. It's very possible that it is. So, that distinction is a helpful perspective towards what's going on. Now, the next step that we need to understand a little bit, this is also something we could talk about forever, it's a fascinating topic, but we'll just say a little bit, and I'm hoping on Sunday to be able to start another topic again, just because we have to draw the line somewhere, but let's at least say a little bit about this. So the concept of Migo de Havidolfin in Yitzukah Havidolfin in Shabbos. Fascinating, fascinating idea. That full faith and credit, we call it. You know, you find, for example, in America, so different states have different laws as far as what's a legal marriage or something like that. But if you get legally married in one state, so they recognize it in another state, because we grant full faith and credit to the laws even when they differ from one context to the next. So I assume also if you get a driver's license in one state and another state requires you to be older before getting a driver's license, but you still are able to use your driver's license from that state in the new state. So here we find this fascinating concept that even though we have kulas and chumras in both directions, so what would not cut it for Hilchos Shabbos, during the week of Sukkos it does cut it. And vice versa. So, how do you understand such an idea? Right? If we're saying, and we've been saying till now, that they're different because they're different, they have different goals, so then why should we be allowed to transfer purposes? Just because it counts as a wall for Sukkah, why should it count as a wall for Shabbos? If Shabbos is not looking for the same thing, why should it work? Yeah, Alex?
Because it says to make your something your gear is kevah for that week. So okay. For that week alone, it has to be kevah.
Okay.
So kevah wouldn't count, but it's transformed just by being Sukkot.
All right, I think you're on this, and I'm going to tweak it a little bit. Right, because the kevah part is, so that's machlokes, and we usually assume arai. So, but let's take the dira part of the sense, right, and say that if, when it comes to Shabbos, so we need to look at this, the Lev Adas says it a little bit like this, right, that you need to see something as designated separately. So normally, tefach is not going to do it. But once this tefach validates a sukkah, and we know that a sukkah, by its very nature, is a person's dira. We said dira sarai, a dira, like you said. So then, a dira is private property. So even though it wouldn't have established private property on its own, but through the definition of sukkah, it takes on that kind of status. Now, that may already answer the question. Just want to call your attention to the fact to kind of confuse things a little bit. But Harrison, you have a question?
Can you say that, like, Leila Das is talking about how you have to create your mental image? Is that, like, by Sukkot's rule? Everyone knows what Sukkot is, and you see it, like, the three, the two walls and the tefach, and that will create the mental image, where by Shabbos it also would do the same sort of thing of creating a dira, but by during the year when, like, people don't have, like, their eyes out for a Sukkot, and they would see the same thing, which just, like, wouldn't bring that belt.
Maybe. I think you're probably saying more than we need to, because I don't know if that's how it works, that it works through people's expectation of the holiday context. It seems that once something is valid as a sukkah, the very definition of sukkah is that it's a dira, and a dira has a rishos hayachid reality to it. So it's an interesting point to consider. Now, I'll just kind of throw this fact out there for you to also consider. So, one of the things we need to understand about this Migo concept is is this an idea that has something to do with the Sukkah Shabbos relationship? Or is this a concept which we could find in other areas of halacha also? Right, we could say that migo de x is also for y. Right, there are other areas of halacha which have different rules normally, but they collide with each other in a certain context, that then they share each other's properties. Does that exist anywhere else? Or is this because of the unique requirements of Shabbos and Sukkah, it happens to work? They can come together here and define each other, and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Or is this a general Shas idea that whenever you have two areas of halacha that have something similar but they define it differently, when they're taking place in the same space, then they share each other's definitions? So that's an interesting question. It happens to be, I mentioned yesterday or the day before, I mentioned sometime in the Sefer of Rabbi Shlomo Warman on Sukkos. So in another one of his Svarim, I don't think he has this in a Sukkah Sefer, but one of his earlier Svarim, he happens to have a discussion about this Sefer called Sheiris Yosef. This is his first five or six Svarim had that title. So in the first volume of Sheiris Yosef, he has a discussion where he uses this principle to explain a number of other things. And just I'll mention one example, because it's relevant to this year. This year, Yom Kippur is Shabbos. Right? So we're going to fast on Shabbos, because we decide, and the din is, that the chiyuv to fast on Yom Kippur is more dominant than the chiyuv to eat on Shabbos. So there is a question that some ask of Yosef Engel, and one of the Svarim asks this, and one of the Semach Tzedek raised this question. Some of the Achronim raised the following question. Why don't we say that maybe we should eat on Shabbos and Kippur a little bit? Why? Because if you learn Hilchos Yom Kippur, maybe we'll get a chance to a little bit. Yom Kippur has different definitions than other similar concepts. You know what I'm talking about? Sound like you were about to say. Right? So normally, halachically, we talk about eating. Right? You have to eat matzah on Pesach. You're not allowed to eat chametz on Pesach. You're not allowed to eat chazer. You'll get malchus. What's the halachic definition of eating from a measurement perspective? Kezayis, right? Whatever that means practically. But theoretically, the size of an olive, the kezayis, that's the cholotara kulo, the definition of eating. However, the Gemara says actually not cholotara kulo. There are one or two exceptions to be precise. One of the two is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, you're chayav kares for eating on Yom Kippur, but the shear is more than a kezayis. And the explanation is, this was called the kibetzah, I mean called the kosevis rather, instead of called a kosevis. It's a larger shear. The explanation is because, as funny as this sounds, there's no isra achila on Yom Kippur. What? Don't take that the wrong way. It means that the chiyuv of fasting on Yom Kippur is not conceptualized as an isser of eating, but it's conceptualized as breaking your fast. You're supposed to be hungry on Yom Kippur, and you're not supposed to have yishuv hadas, is the halachic term, or an Aramaic yisuve daita. You're not supposed to have the satisfaction of having broken your fast. And the way we understand it is that less than a kosevis, you're still pretty miserable. You're still not considered to have broken your fast. So it happens to be a larger shear. So the question was like this. Why don't we say that since some of the Rishonim hold you have a chiyuv daraisa to eat on Shabbos, so why don't we make Kiddush on Shabbos, Yom Kippur, eat exactly a kezayis, we will fulfill our obligation to have a suda on Shabbos, and we will not violate the Isra on Yom Kippur because the shear is larger. Now maybe you'll tell me, well, that's not going to work because there's a concept called chatzi shear, that the Gemara says that whenever we have a prohibition that has a limit to it, has a measurement to it, that measurement is only relevant for punishment. It's still prohibited to have less. You're not allowed to have a little bite of chametz on Pesach, even though it's less than a kedayis, it won't be chayiv karis, but even a little bit you're not allowed to eat. That's called chatzi shir. So why don't we say, so that's maybe the answer here, because you're still not allowed to eat anything in Yom Kippur. You're not chayiv below a certain amount, but you're not permitted to eat. So, okay, so to that we'll say fine, but it's machlokis in the Gemara, whether that's an Isser Dereis or an Isser Derabanan. We actually paskin as an Isser Dereis, but there is an opinion in Gemara Rish Lakish that it's only Asim Midrabanan. At least according to Rish Lakish, why don't we say that you should do this plan? You should make Kiddush and have a Kezias exactly. And that's only going to be an Issa Drabanan, and the mitzvah deraisa to eat on Shabbos should outweigh it. So do that. Have exactly a kezias on Shabbos and Kippur. Why at least does Reish Lakish not give that advice? That's the question. Okay? So there are a few answers. Yor Sameach has a famous position where he says that when Shabbos and Kippur coincide on the same day, it's not Shabbos and Kippur happening same time, but rather it's a new entity, I guess, Shabipper, where they become a new concept, and there never was a Chiyuv Kiddush and eating on Shabipper. So that's another theme that could make for a good drasha this year, if you want to talk about what that means. But that answer aside, Rabbi Warman mentions, you could say another approach. You could say Migo. That we find, just like we say, Migo to have dolphin lin in Sukkah, have dolphin lin in Shabbos. So that principle tells us abstractly that whenever two areas of halacha coincide and they have similar concepts that are defined differently, they use each other's definitions. So, in this case, you can't tell me that you want this to be considered achila for the purposes of Shabbos. You want this to be considered a sudas mitzvah, but that we should not pay attention to it in Hilchos Yom Kippur, that we don't do. It's true on a regular Yom Kippur, if you were to eat just a kezias without any concept that it should be a sudas Shabbos, okay, that would be below the threshold. But for it to be significant as a sudas Shabbos and not significant as eating on Yom Kippur, that doesn't happen. When the two share the same space, they share the same rules. And he has a number of other nafkaminas for that, yes?
Didn't you already say before, though, that Yom Kippur is not the Issa of actually eating the
Issa? Right. Right, so you have to, that requires a little bit more explanation than why this concept makes any sense at all. Right, so but first, what's interesting is that he makes this jump, right, that he assumes that Migo is a general concept. This kind of Migo is a general concept. And it's not just about the relationship between Sukkot and Shabbos. It's something which can show up in a number of other areas of halacha. If you remember correctly, he invokes it at least three other contexts. I won't have time to explain them all today. I'll just mention one quickly. There's a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos in Maseches Nida about the fact that the Gemara tells us that there is a heter, at least from the HaTorah, to wear shatnez if you need to for the purposes of tzitzis. You have a wool, you have a linen garment, and you need to attach wool tzitzis to it. So, min HaTorah, you're allowed to do, you're obligated to do that. So, Tosfos attacks Rashi because Tosfos says that based on Rashi's definition of how you attach tzitzis and how you violate the Isser Shatnez, it's possible to do one without the other. It's possible to attach tzitzis in a way that you'd be yotzei the mitzvah of tzitzis, but it wouldn't constitute a connection in the Hebrew for the prohibition of shatnez. So why you need this whole din? Why don't we just say that you can fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis without violating the issue of shatnez? We don't have to push one away for the other. So he says, no, it's the same thing, that even though shatnez by itself, this would not be considered an attachment, this would not be considered one garment, but once, for the purposes of tzitzis, we're looking at it as connected, So then for the purposes of shatnez, it's also considered to be connected, and that's why we need the Torah to tell us that it's okay. And he has at least two other examples. Maybe on Sunday I'll fill them in, because one for sure would take too long to explain. The others may be a little quicker, but maybe I'll mention those two other examples at a different time. But the point that we're focusing on here is that he takes from this concept of Migo and doesn't assume it's about the Sukkah Shabbos relationship, but rather it's a general halachic concept that has many other examples throughout the halachic system. So in order to explain that, I think you have to say, it's a little bit of a challenging concept, as you were just about to ask, but I think you have to say that normally we know that the halachic system as a whole works on abstract rules, as we see especially in the Masechta Sukkah, and normally those rules are going to be defined by what makes sense within that mitzvah. So the mitzvah is going to dictate how the rules should be determined. But if the halacha is already giving importance to something, so we have a concept in halacha called achshavah, that normally something may not get a certain status, but if my personal experience is to give significance to this, it becomes significant, it becomes important halachically. So, for example, you find in Hilchos Pesach, Hilchos Chametz, that if you have something which is not roi, achilas kalev, something which is not going to be considered significant for eating purposes, it shouldn't be subject to the prohibition of chametz. But if I choose to eat it anyway, so then at least midrabanan, maybe more, I am showing that I think it's important. And therefore it takes on a certain status. So just like my unique perspectives can give something a status it wouldn't otherwise have, so certainly the halacha should be able to do that. That if the halacha in a different realm considers it to be significant, so then even though this mitzvah with its own themes would not have granted significance to this act, but once the halacha has given it significance, even for a different din, this understanding of Migo seems to say that it carries over here also. So that's just interesting, and again, I'm happy to share the other examples with you maybe on Sunday. Otherwise we'll run out of time now. But it's just interesting because it takes us away then from that understanding of a specific connection between Sukkah and Shabbos that makes the Migo over here make sense. Okay, so just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we focused on the fact today of differences between Shabbos and Sukkah, and we noted quite a few differences, which all seem to flow from, as Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, that on Sukkot we're interested in Adira, and on Shabbos we're interested in just marking off an area as distinct, which also translates to the idea that Sukkot we care about the walls themselves, and on Shabbos we care about what the walls do, but not about the walls. And we also thought maybe that Shabbos we're interested here in what it's not the Rishus HaRabim, and on Sukkot we're interested in what it is, it has to be a Dira. And then we noted that the idea of this extra tefach, which we have to figure out how that works, so we mentioned, as the Leib Ladas explained, that it's effective because with the other two walls, necessarily, it creates the mental picture of something that is a dira, and therefore has that impact. And that explains also both why it's different from Shabbos and why it's only true when it's the third wall and not as any single wall by itself. And then we had to explain, once we've spent all this time talking about differences, so what about this concept of Migo de Havidofalin and Sukkah Havidofalin and Shabbos? So one way is to say it, that normally Shabbos needs a Rishus HaYachid, and by normal standards this wouldn't be a Rishus HaYachid, but once we have the Halacha of Sukkah that calls this Adira, so then Adira by its definition is a Rishus HaYachid, and that makes it work. But we also noted that there are some who understand this principle more broadly and see that Migo means that whenever the Halacha grants status in one area, that status carries over to other areas also when they coincide. And we gave a few examples of that, and said that requires us to understand it a little bit differently through a principle that's similar to Achshavei, to the granting of status that isn't automatically there, but when you bring it to the table, it becomes relevant. That seems to be the case here as well. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. We'll see you, God willing, tomorrow. It should be a